So something that I frequently quote, and I'll quote again, I think I even mentioned it the last time we had our talk, which I didn't record, was the words by this 27-year-old female, Yaiko Iwasaki, back in the early 1900s, after a series of ever-deepening awakenings. In a letter that she wrote to her teacher, Harada Roshi, and very simply she said this. She said, "What a relief to discover that just as I am perfect." Now, one might say, wow, how wonderful to have gotten that insight after so much practice, so many deep awakenings. This is surely the rebirth of a great bodhisattva. Harada Roshi said that about her. It's the rebirth of a great bodhisattva. Certainly not what I am. That would be a profound misunderstanding of what she was saying. And one might go further to say that those words, "what a relief to discover that just as I am perfect," is not something that is the end product of a lot of practice and a lot of awakenings. It is the very beginning of what I would call true practice, the very start of it. Why is it that we don't automatically see this thing that should be the beginning of practice, the start of true practice? Something happens to us. It's not true of all children. You know, some children are abused from a young age. Some children grow up in terrific poverty. But even in situations like that, you'll see videos, for example, of kids suffering in various locations in the world where the adults are killing each other off, and all the mayhem that goes on, we know this well. But the children have some strange ability to play and laugh, make toys out of any little thing they might find. We too, as children, there's a certain carefree plunging into the present moment, getting so lost in what you're doing that you kind of forget about you yourself as a self. Something that all of you may remember is going to a movie, perhaps, as a child. You walk out of the movie and it's like the movie's still going on. You were so lost in the movie. Your whole life disappeared. Your whole identity disappeared. You could merge with that movie, plunge into that movie, including the movie of your life, all the events occurring in each moment, being fascinated by a firefly, by whatever it might be. And then something happens to us. It often happens around 10, 11, 12, perhaps just before puberty or right at the beginning of puberty. We begin to pick up. Now, I don't know if we begin to or if it starts to gel or we start to believe it or something else happens. I don't understand it. Maybe it's a brain thing. Maybe it's part of our development of a human brain. But we begin to have a notion of perfection, and simultaneously that we somehow fall short of that. And it all starts. The whole trauma of high school and all the things that people always talk about that I can say honestly I also went through very intensely. That I've observed my kids and now, you know, one of my grandkids beginning to go through. 11 years old. Certain notion of perfection brewing there. Something common for children around this age is to develop various forms, either very mild or more severe forms of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, trying to bring back some kind of order, some kind of control, some kind of regularity, some kind of symmetry to what feels like a life that's not right, not perfect, or a world that's not perfect, or something's unsure, something's uncertain. It shouldn't be this way. This is the evolution of the human condition. Now we seem to, luckily, many of us, quote, grow out of it, which probably in many, many cases means we find a way to hide it, conceal it, compensate for it. We get degrees. We get status. We collect friends. We collect objects. We collect money. And when this sense of imperfection begins to rear its head, some of us make it go away with alcohol, with drugs. This is the human condition. Or we affiliate with something. We affiliate with the most perfect of all religions. And anyone else not in that religion is actually an infidel. Maybe even to the extent that they should be destroyed, or if anyone challenges my belief system that I need so badly in order to feel that I am one of the perfect ones, ought to be gotten rid of or thrown in jail or whatever it might be. So these things go on to more subtle or more extreme degrees and many, many human beings, I can't say everybody, but we see it around us and we see it inside of us. And so we somehow, I don't know, almost miraculously trip over this particular path that we're doing here, which I with great reluctance would call Zen or Buddhism or name it in any way, but we trip over it. And it resonates in a very deep way, and we begin to, in some ways, utilize it to overcome imperfection. This is going to make me perfect. This is going to get rid of all my neuroses. This is going to fix all the past traumas of my life. It's going to make me into a perfect person. I'm going to have a perfect enlightenment. I'm going to be perfectly happy. This happens. To many of us, maybe all of us on this path, in some way or another, along the way. The Buddha knew this quite well. As a matter of fact, I'll read a line from the Diamond Sutra. Now, as you recall, this is probably the single most, from the Zen standpoint, dear to one's heart, famous, profound sutra in Buddhism, the Diamond Sutra. One of the lines from this sutra is what awakened the mind of Wei Neng when he was a young man, hearing a monk chanting it as he was walking past Wei Neng. Wei Neng was collecting firewood. He was very poor and illiterate, so he couldn't have read it. He had to hear it. So I'll read you something from the Diamond Sutra, just a very short paragraph. So, just as a preface to this, the Buddha traditionally, in traditional Buddhism, is marked by, identified by, something called 32 marks of a Buddha. And they are various physical marks and other kinds of marks, behavioral marks. And this is how you can identify a true Buddha. This is the tradition. So, Buddha asks Subhuti. Subhuti is the foil throughout the Diamond Sutra. Subhuti is one of his monks. So then the Buddha said, Subhuti, if the Tathagata, all right, Tathagata, I'll define that word too. Tathagata means one who has gone thus. One who has gone thus. Which is an appellation of the Buddha and is capitalized. Then the Buddha said, Subhuti, if the Tathagata may be perceived by such marks, any great imperial ruler is the same as the Tathagata, because I guess great imperial rulers shared some of these marks. Subhuti then said to the Buddha, World-honored one, as I understand the meaning of Buddha's words, the Tathagata may not be perceived by the 32 marks. Whereupon the world-honored one uttered this verse, He who sees me by form, he who seeks me in sound, perverted are his footsteps upon the way, for he cannot perceive the Tathagata. He who has a notion of perfection, some particular set of characteristics, circumstances, absence of this or that, absence of neurosis, absence of reaction, presence of joy all the time, rainbows. Whoever has this as their notion of what this world-honored one, Buddha, Buddha nature, Buddhahood, enlightenment is, this person's footsteps are perverted upon the path and they cannot see he who has gone thus, thus. So profound a teaching. And once again, bringing us back to those amazing, wonderful, healing words of Yagyasaki. What a relief to discover that just as I am, I am perfect. Just as I am, I am perfect. Now, what does this perfect mean? What does this perfect mean? The Buddha already tore apart the notion of the 32 marks, some perfected mark, some external image of perfection. So ordinarily what we view as perfection is we have a template of perfection. We have a notion of perfection. And yes, in this particular path we're doing, we can develop, absorb, read about, and begin to believe in various kinds of what we would call perfection from the standpoint of a spiritual path, a Zen path, Zen training, Zen awakening, whatever it might be. So our ordinary notion of what perfection is that this reality matches a pre-made template. This is a template of perfection, and it matches it. What if the way things are right now could never match any template? Could never. Not in a billion years, not until the end of the universe, could the way things are match a template of anything? What if the way things are right now is the one and only way things could be? The only way. The end result of every cause and every condition throughout the entire fabric of the universe, all the way up to this present moment, at this point in the universe, the center of which I reside. And it could not have been any other way. And I got that. Would my notion of perfection be different? Would the template be smashed? Is this maybe what liberation is? To clearly see the absolute nature of everything as it appears, as it unfolds. As I sometimes say, the unfolding of past moments, because it's complete, it's done. what about when we're suffering? What about when we're sad? What about when people are criticizing us? What about when we feel lonely? What about these things? What about when something bad happens? Someone dies, someone gets sick, I get sick. Is that still perfect? What does the Buddha have to say about that? Well, let's read what he said. We'll go back to the Diamond Sutra. Here's another passage in the Diamond Sutra. This is a very seemingly straightforward but immensely subtle, profound teaching. So this is the beginning of something, this is section 16. Furthermore, Subhuti, if it be that good men and good women who receive and retain this discourse are downtrodden, their evil destiny is the inevitable retributive result of sins committed in their past mortal lives. By virtue of their present misfortunes, the reacting effects of the past will thereby be worked out, and they will be in a position to attain the consummation of incomparable enlightenment. That's the words there are a little traditional and a little bit difficult to completely get in the ordinary way, but I'm going to read this same line from this wonderful collection that I often will cite. It's the Hekigan Roku, the Blue Cliff Record. And this is one of the last koan in this collection of 100, which students traditionally will go through one by one. You go the first, second, third, up to the 100th koan. And this may take years to go through, years, working one-on-one with a teacher, doing deep zazen over each one of these till you really get it. And yet you never completely get it. You have to keep going back over and over throughout your whole life, seeing dimensions that you never guessed were there before. I'm going to read this koan, the 97th koan. The Diamond Sutra and Being Reviled. The Diamond Sutra says, quote, "One who is reviled by others has done wicked acts in former lifetimes, which doom him to fall into evil worlds. But because of the scorn and vilification by others in the present life, the transgressions in the former life are wiped out." And we're not going to go too deeply into this koan right now. Maybe one of these Taisho will really look deeply into it, but I want to just do one thing. I want to zoom way out on it. Zoom way out. See how it fits with the whole thing. If you're vilified, it's because of actions committed, so-called evil actions in a past lifetime. What? Who was there? What entity now is being punished for some entity's actions in a past lifetime? What is this? What is it saying? Exactly the way things are could not have been otherwise. They are the results of causes and conditions throughout all of time, throughout all of space, to this present moment. It's saying, it's the way it is because it could not have been any other way. And that is perfect. Perfect. So the moment this person who's vilified, who's despairing, who's struggling, gets that it couldn't have been any other way, it's not that one doesn't stop trying. But one is able now to create the space for it to be exactly as it is. I am exactly as I am. I am the end result of all causes and conditions to this moment. Just as I am, I am the perfect result of all causes and conditions. The perfect result. Cannot be compared. And yes, this is the very start of practice. This is the start. Because until we get to this point, we're continually fighting ourselves, fighting our karma. We can't muster the energy to be the space and let it be in that space exactly as it is, in the space of our zazen. When we can do that, we liberate tremendous energy. All the energy we wasted fighting, it shouldn't have happened this way. Those bad people, all the rest of it. We zoom out enough to see the entire fabric, absolute in each moment. Then we can begin to understand something very profound about it. This one word, just is just. As the Buddha referred to Tathagata, one who has gone thus. So that is the beginning of practice and the end of practice. So we'll end there tonight.